Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
Let's get started. John Malden, Millennium Advisors, who has been on the road, and we welcome him right now. The road is Europe, isn't it?
It was a lot of fun.
You've been there a lot, many years. What is let's just start with the idea of this D word, depression. Do you use that in your writing, that certain parts of peripheral Europe are in depression?
I think you have to say that, you know, Greece, Spain, Portugal, Ireland, they're in a depression. Italy is not in a depression, but it's certainly not a happy camper.
You saw Spain GDP today, not sub 2%, but at getting there, there's just a metric to the real economy. This was a big theme at Davos, John Malden. Do you link the financial economy with the real economy, or are they really two separate beasts now in Europe?
The real economy certainly is affecting the financial economy. When you've got 25% unemployment in much of Europe, in the peripheral countries, you can't not affect the financial economy. And when you're in Greece, all up and down the food chain, the complaint is there are no banks. There is no bank lending. They're getting ready to put $40 billion into the banking system. The EU, the ECB.
Into Greece.
Just into the...
Okay, $20 billion, $22 billion in Cyprus, $40 billion in Greece. That's $60 billion.
And the Irish are sitting very politely, very quietly going, it's our turn. You made us pony up our money.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're giving the Greeks and, you know, and the Cypriots money... We did what you asked us to do.
And folks,
we cut. We would like some of that money, too.
And what John Malden describes here was the backstory among international economists at Davos. The idea of Cyprus is no big deal, except it establishes that process for the Irish who stepped up bravely and tried to fix their system.
I wrote this 2.5-3 years ago when the Irish were having to pony up. I said, it will not last. The IMF economist told the Irish negotiators, I talked to the guys that were in the room, told them, trust us, we'll fix this when the time comes. We'll take care of you. The Irish fully expect to not have to pay that bank debt.
Well, you look at this and then you see the euro advance. And we had an argument about this, like we do here, a collegially constructive argument this morning. The euro is stronger. Does that signal a better Europe? Or do we look at the present economic data and say, why is the euro going up if the data is so moldy?
Well, you're asking somebody that thinks that the euro is going to parity with the dollar and, you know, been on record that for a long time. So I don't know why the euro is going up, except the currencies move. I think the euro is going to have to get substantially weaker, but I think the driver for that is going to be France. France is the new Greece. If you look at where France is today and go back to where Greece was 5 years ago, you see so many similarities. France can get their act together, but there is no impetus in this country.
Where will
there
that catalyst
be? There is no movement.
I agree. They need a catalyst. I mean, we need a catalyst. We'll talk about this in a bit here, John.
Yeah.
We need a catalyst in Washington, but it's nothing compared to the century structures of France. They really don't have it, do they?
And they don't, and that's why it's hard not to be pessimistic about France. It's hard not to say France is the new Greece. You can't say that about the U.S. We have we control our destiny. I mean, it's like a baseball team, you know, or a football team at the end of the season. You know, they can run the table, they get to be champions. They can control their destiny. The U.S. can do that. I'm not certain that France really has that opportunity because their governments are not prepared to do what they need to have to do.
Within your book, you talk about straw hats in winter and the idea of going against the grain. Do you need to buy Nestle? Do you need to buy Unilever? Do you need to buy the blue chips of Europe, or have they just already moved too far?
There's value in Europe. When you ask about specific stocks, Nestle or Unilever, I haven't looked at those numbers. But if you're asking me, is there still value in Europe? Yes. I mean, where I'm frankly a lot more interested to try to find value is in Japanese technology companies being short the yen. If we're talking about a currency, there's a currency that I think is on its way to much lower lows against the dollar. I mean, you know, it could drop by half over the next 4 to 5, 7 years. And if you see that type of move with the type of printing that the Bank of Japan is going to do.
And the export heritage of the country.
Export heritage of the country. I mean, Japan isn't like Greece or some of the other countries. They have magnificent companies, magnificent technologies. Their robotics is
David
unequaled.
Harrow, I want to butt in here and say David Harrow at Harris Associates strongly agrees with you on the distinction here that Japan is a well-run society just trying to get out of the way of lousy economics.
Well, somebody keeps I was talking with a New York Times reporter the other day that called me a
who? You a spoke reporter. To the New York Times?
Hey,
Rich,
they wrote
take
about
a note.
Me.
Last time on. Absolutely.
Well, he's an important guy.
Oh, that's true. Well, John Malden with us. Bullseye investing, targeting real returns in a smoke and mirrors market. Where's the smoke and mirrors right now?
Smoke and mirrors is still in Japan. It's still in central banks. The central banks are trying to make us believe they have this under control, and they don't. They don't have the clue that they think they have. And the rest of us keep desperately hoping. You know, it's kind of like Colonel Jessup sitting on the wall. You know, you better hope that I'm there. Yes, what I do may hurt, may destroy people, but I'm saving lives.
Are you worried about what they're doing or what they're going to be able to do? I mean, about the exit?
When has their forecasting ever been right? How should we be confident that they're going to be able to exit this thing without a hiccup? That's what worries me. That's the smoke and mirrors. We seem to think that somehow or another the Federal Reserve has a handle on things. Go back to the 2007 minutes. The only prescient person in the room was another fellow Texan, Richard Fisher. I mean, Tim Geithner was basically dismissing him and dissing him. That transcript was not something that inspired confidence.
Right now, on the American economy, the American experience, truly one of our most popular guests, John Malden, who writes long, lengthy notes. They get reprinted all over the internet space. He writes books. When's the next book out?
Sometime this summer. I'll be doing one with Bill Dunkelberg.
Oh, interesting.
We're doing it on the future of employment.
The future of labor.
Future of employment.
Give us a heads up here. Is there an optimism to your view on American job economy?
Well, there's always optimism because that's what the free markets do. But it's certainly changing. I mean, I think we're in the middle of something that's almost as upsetting as what we saw in the late 1800s when we went from a rural society to began to be an urban society, and we lost a huge percentage of jobs in the labor market. Where we're now seeing anything that can be replaced by processing, robots, new equipment, we're seeing that middle class change. And so the problem becomes when we talk about the difference between the haves and the haves not, the haves becomes higher skill based and then service oriented. And those service oriented jobs can't be given the same wage scale because there's a lot of competition in there, which is why you have half of college graduates today working in jobs they don't need a degree for.
What is the distinction between your, I'm sure you can tell folks with the accent, the Texas solution or the Florida solution, the Southern solution, and the solution of the four cities that lag behind so much in Case-Shiller yesterday, New York, Chicago, Cleveland, and Boston. There's an American distinction of how we're going to fix this, how we're going to help people that don't have computer skills that are falling behind on that human capital curve.
Well, part of it is just where are the entrepreneurs going?
To Texas.
To Texas. They're going to Florida.
Phoenix.
To Phoenix. I mean, they're going to places where capital is welcome. And so if you want to, here in Manhattan, charge people 60% plus to live here, which I was just telling somebody last night, because I've been in 60 plus countries. I've been all over the world. Somebody said, where's your favorite place to go? And I have to kind of say New York is one of my favorite places in the world. I love it. I would hesitate to want to live here when they want an extra almost 20% of my income for the privilege of being in Manhattan.
They send me to Davos, so New York looks cheap.
Well, I mean, I was just in Geneva last week,
and
you know, they charge $10 for a Diet Coke. I mean, it's just...
Tell me, let's go right there, folks. Forget about the economic mumbo-jumbo with John Malden. Let's talk about the human condition and the distortions that this six-year crisis is giving us, whether it's a $10 Diet Coke in Geneva, it's a $12.30 Big Mac in Zurich, or it's the distortions you see between New York and Texas. It's a greatly distorted system right now.
But it's government, and that's where the distortion is. We, as human beings in the developed world, we're more and more wanting to organize our lives around government. We're wanting governments to protect us from change. And the defining characteristic of the next 20 years is going to be change. And there are people going, I only want change if it puts more money in my pocket. Well, that's not necessarily what change does. Change is going to make your job maybe redundant. You're going to have to learn new skills, new talents. The way that Obamacare, for instance, is going to force us to reorganize society is going to say you can't. Your business doesn't need to be above 50 employees. So now you're going to start outsourcing things. Once you start outsourcing things, then that puts your IT or your accounting up to smaller businesses that typically are going to end up paying less, that are going to have less benefits. That's going to mean you're going to have to be more entrepreneurial, more willing to do a lot of things. Your talents are going to have to become far more broad. It's going to be more difficult to, I've got this one thing that I do. That's a complete reorganization of our society.
We're all going to have to go out and learn Python. In 30 seconds, are you long America right now?
Yes. But just like that Greek central banker, I want to wait 6 months. And the reason I want to, if we solve our deficit crisis, I am so bullish on America. With the energy boom that we're seeing, if we get our deficit in order, and it doesn't have to be my Republican way, okay, my smaller government, it just has to get us to where it's a sustainable deficit. Mm-hmm. This country's nothing but upside.
John Malden, thank you so much. A book with Bill Dunkelberg coming out, the movie, December of 2016.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013, Bloomberg LP.